Welcome to Players Next Live. I'm Rob Jeske, founder of Players Next and your host for today's show. For our return listeners, we're glad to have you back. And for first-time listeners, we hope you enjoy the ride. Over the past 40 years, I have lived almost every aspect of youth sports. As a multi-sport athlete in my younger days, a coach, an entrepreneur, and finally, as a parent. So what is Players Next and the show all about? Over the past 25 years, youth sports has experienced incredible growth. Yet today, that community still lacks an accessible resource that delivers impartial guidance, tools, and support necessary for players and parents to succeed. In collaboration with experienced athletes, coaches, and parents, Players Next has developed a blueprint for that solution. Our mission is clear: to build the leading resource and community for youth sports. And our plan is realistic: to start the conversation about youth sports, and once people are talking, anything is possible. Before we go any further, I would like to express my thanks to the WCHL team and our sponsors for supporting this quest. First off, Revels Turf and Tractor, your local John Deere dealer specializing in golf and sports turf equipment solutions for more than 50 years. Revels Turf and Tractor is proud to support the UNC, Duke, NC State, and Durham Bulls field maintenance crews, as well as its new and exciting North Carolina Signature Field Program designed to deliver much-needed support to high school athletic facilities. We'd also like to thank Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks. Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks were designed to help kids eat right and do well in school. Their snacks are all natural and loaded with learning, education in every bite. Dick and Jane Educational Snacks are available at Amazon.com. Simply search Educational Snacks. We'd also like to thank VGM Club, helping support and drive value to the club and sports management industry, as well as the Green Beagle Lodge, the area's premier pet resort and day spa. Today's show is a fun one. We call it the Stadium. As our community grows, listener questions continue to fill our inbox. Unfortunately, time constraints during our featured guest shows often prevent us from getting all of those inquiries on the air. So every few weeks, Players Next Live will follow a different format called The Stadium, where our entire time is dedicated to airing and answering questions from our growing virtual community. These questions have been reviewed by our advisory council, made up of leading athletes, coaches, and parents, and their recommendations will be shared on our show today. Each episode of The Stadium will cover three phases of youth sports. The first is Discover How to Play, the introductory or beginner phase of youth sports development. The second is Learn to Compete, the intermediate phase of youth sports development. And finally, Become a Champion, the advanced phase of youth sports. So as we continue on with our first segment of the show today, let's get started with some questions from the field. Our first question today comes from Tamika, a mom in Greensboro, North Carolina. Tamika asks, my 9-year-old son wants to run track. He seems to have good natural speed, but what is next? Tamika, thanks for the question. That's a common transition that a lot of parents face as their kids get interested in sports. First, as in all sports, we highly recommend fundamentals. Just like other sports, natural ability will only take you so far. But in the end, sound fundamentals seem to be what separate the good athletes from the great ones. As we often say, college camps are a great source for expert coaching at a reasonable cost. We'd encourage you to seek out any local universities, colleges, even community colleges. They typically have programs that are community outreach in nature, summer camps, school break camps that would be a great opportunity for your son to get exposure to some high-level coaching and build those proper fundamentals. We also recommend reaching out to your local high school coach. Many of these coaches offer private coaching on the side during their teaching and coaching careers, or they know of good ones in their area. And we found many listeners that have found that the local high school coach can become a great resource for helping them navigate that respective sport. And at your son's age, we often caution parents to avoid help or programs that require a large investment. That time will come, but not in these early stages. The youth sports world is full of individuals or organizations that are a little bit too quick, in our opinion, to try and seek a major commitment and a large financial investment in return for the early stages of your child's development. So great question, Tamika. I hope our answer helped. So let's move on to our next question. This question comes in from Kate, a mom in Fairfax, Virginia. Our daughter is a good 9-year-old soccer player. We're getting some pressure to join an elite team from friends and people we know in the community. What is the right choice at this stage? Well, Kate, this is a very common juncture and an important question, so thanks for writing in. We hear over and over again from top coaches that player development outweighs team success. So with that, I think it's important for you and your family and your daughter to focus on this decision or juncture on finding a program that really helps develop your child with the right skills and sports IQ and learning of the game, as opposed to which team is necessarily winning big tournaments and winning a lot of trophies right now. We'd also encourage you to look at which team or program offers your daughter the best coaching and developmental opportunity, because not all young athletes are the same. So it's not unlike a lot of other decisions we make as parents. We need to find the right fit for our child. So again, there's oftentimes a larger program in the area or a more successful program in your area, but it's really critical that you find the one that has culturally and environmentally the right fit for your child. We'd also encourage you to consider the commitment level and family resources required of your choices, both in the short and long term. It's really important because as you enter a pathway for your child, in your case, in soccer, you need to look out a few moves ahead and really understand what is everything that's going on in your child's life. Do they play multiple sports? Are they involved in the arts and other school activities? What is your family bandwidth? Because a lot of cases, what might appear to be the right program in terms of resume may not fit everything that's going on in your family life as well as in your child's life. So finding that right fit is really, really important as you cross these junctures. And last but not least, once you've gathered all the relevant information, make sure you share and discuss it with your child. Kids have important opinions that need to be heard, and the sooner the better, especially in these cases. We're not only asking the family and parents to make a major investment in youth sports, but it's also important that we understand and calmly allow our child to invest their opinion in the process, because at the end of the day, it's their childhood. It's their journey, and a lot of times they have ideas or opinions that sometimes don't come out because we as parents sometimes are quick to sign them up for a program or choose what we think is the right path. And along that journey, the more you can get input from your child and allow them to be safe in expressing that opinion, I think the entire youth sports experience will be successful along the way. So great question, Kate, and thanks for writing in. Our next question comes from Kelly, a dad in Chicago, Illinois. My 8-year-old daughter is interested in volleyball, which I know absolutely nothing about. Where do I begin? Well, Kelly, this is a very common question, very common crossroad that parents face. As our kids are exposed to more and more things than we ever were as kids, they spike in interest and want to get started. So the first thing we recommend is finding a local entry-level program that also has some longevity. So you might, as I mentioned to Kate in our recent question, you want to look at both the short and the long term. So you want to find a program that offers some good fundamental player development at the early stages, but also has the opportunity to perpetuate if your child's ambitions and enthusiasm continue to grow. We also, as you've heard us mention many times, our advisory council recommends summer camps at a nearby college or high school. These venues provide great coaching for beginners, and most importantly, they typically provide a lot of fun. And that's one of the things you want to foster, is the balance between learning those fundamentals and becoming an athlete, and also making sure that it's fun, which will ultimately perpetuate their passion and interest in the game. We also recommend taking in a local high school or college match, good for both the player and the parent. These in-person experiences are amazing for young athletes. We've seen them for years, but for them, their eyes get double the size they normally are, and they get very excited by the environment. And that experience can help both of you learn about the sport and develop a passion together. And then finally, we've heard several coaches recommend online learning and even video games to help foster IQ development within a sport and an understanding of the game. So I hope those recommendations help, Kelly. Thanks for writing in. And we're coming up on our first break here. We'll be right back to continue the Stadium Episode 2. Welcome back to Players Next Live. I'm Rob Jeske, and we're excited for today's show, The Stadium, where you, our listeners, drive the content. The second segment of our show is brought to you by Revels Tractor, your local John Deere dealer, and their exciting national signature field program benefiting high school sports. So now let's get back to some more listener questions. Our next question comes from Cameron, a 10-year-old in Pittsboro, North Carolina. Cameron asks, I love baseball and want to be an MLB pitcher someday. What pitches should I develop and any other tips for me? Well, Cameron, we love your enthusiasm and we always tell young athletes, keep believing in your dreams. As for pitches, our experts recommend that you first focus on getting command of your fastball. Learn to beat hitters by moving your location around, changing the speed of your fastball depending on the different count and different situation in the game. They also recommend that the second pitch you should develop is a simple changeup. One of the things we've seen with young pitchers is too quick of an advancement to trying to develop big breaking balls and sliders and sinkers and various more complex pitches, which can, with a young player, also tax their arm development. And one of the things that over the years advanced and experienced pitchers have come to share with us is that at the end of the day, the ability to move your fastball around, slightly change the speed of that fastball, can really keep hitters off balance. And in the early stages of your career, really make you an effective and dominant pitcher. And then as you physically mature and you get command of that fastball and all the different ways you can use it, then you start adding in those additional pitches and you really become an outstanding pitcher. So as for other advice, our coaches also recommend that while you enjoy your time as a pitcher, play some other positions too. You're a young athlete. Seeing the game from all the different positions can really help you enhance your understanding of the game and really help you down the road, whether you're ultimately a pitcher, maybe you transfer to shortstop, center field, maybe even a catcher someday. So playing those other positions, seeing and understanding the game and experiencing the game from those positions will really help your long-term development, ultimately, whatever position you end up playing. So thanks for writing in, Cameron. Keep your passion at a high level, and best of luck to you. As we transition into our Learn to Compete phase, which will feature questions from parents and players in that intermediate developmental phase of youth sports, let's shift to a question from Will, a 13-year-old in Atlanta, Georgia. Will asks, I want to play high school football and hopefully college football someday. How do I choose the right position to focus my energy and practice on? Will, that's a terrific and a very intelligent question for a 13-year-old. We would recommend that you first make an honest assessment of your physical skill, your strengths, your weaknesses. What are the things you do well, not only in football, but in other sports? Do you have quickness? Do you have speed? Do you have arm strength? Do you like the physical contact? Strong upper body, strong lower body. Really take a good long assessment of what your strengths and weaknesses are as an athlete. And then we'd ask you to take a look at your gene pool at the same time to really understand your physical path. While we all are individuals, we do come from a genetic history, and that will have some impact, not always, directly, but will have some impact on your ultimate size and speed and strength that you're capable of developing. So first get that assessment of your strengths and weaknesses, then understand where you think your gene pool is going to take you physically. And then I'd ask you to research your high school team to really understand the types of players they use in their system. And I thought this was a great response from our coaching staff, because at the age that you are, to look ahead, what kind of system do they run, based on how you've assessed your strengths and weaknesses and your physical development opportunities, where would you fit in that potential high school program that you're going to be a part of it, and start to then write down the key characteristics of those positions, offense or defense, that you think fit your profile, if you will, that's made up of those strengths and weaknesses and physical capabilities. And then based on your understanding of the high school program, positions that interest you that you think you might be a good fit, then build a plan to develop those skills and the physical requirements of those positions. And so now your practice will be focused, you'll have a purpose, and I think ultimately as you move up into high school, you'll find that you'll be a player that they might say is, hey, a terrific fit for this position or that position, and you'll be ready to achieve your high school ambitions. And then as you start to look out into the college years, follow that same process, honest assessment of your strengths and weaknesses, and then look to find a program and a position where you can fit. So best of luck, Will. I love your passion and ambition, and appreciate you writing in. Our next question is from Mia, 12-year-old in Charlotte, North Carolina. Mia asks, I get really nervous before our soccer games. Any suggestion on how to relax and better prepare? Well, Mia, thank you for your honesty, and it's a great question. And the first thing that our advisory council would respond is you're not alone. This is very common at athletes at all levels, from the beginner stage, the advanced stage, up into the college and professionals. First, being nervous means that deep down inside, you're excited and ready to play. It's one of the mental mistakes that we as athletes and coaches sometimes fall into is believing that nervousness is a negative state of mind or feeling. What it really means is your body and your mind is energized. It's ready to compete. And how we channel that energy that the nervousness is creating is really the difference between making it a strength in your athletic endeavors versus something that holds you back. The second idea that we wanted to share with you is that most high-level athletes have found that building a pregame routine builds confidence, and that pregame routine can really be that calming blanket that you wrap around yourself as you prepare for a game, whether it's from the time you wake up in the morning, driving to the field, going through your warm-ups. Generate some activities that are part of your routine. In some cases, it can be a light jog. It can be shooting some baskets in the driveway. It can be kicking the ball, doing some of your drills from practice. Some athletes choose music, things of that nature, to calm themselves as they prepare for a game. And also, during your warm-up time, build some activities that help loosen you up rather than just sort of standing around and feeling that nervousness. And the most important aspect that I want to emphasize is make it a routine. So make it something that you do before practice, make it something that you do before games, and by having it be a routine, the very definition of the word, it's something you'll be very comfortable with, which will hopefully then calm you and let you channel that pregame energy into some successful results. Third, get plenty of rest and eat well leading up to the games. A rested and well-nourished mind and body will calm your nerves. Studies have been done across many sports of many ages, the impact of being well-rested and being well-nourished and how that affects your mental state of mind and your body's ability to respond to the pressures of competition. And then finally, share your feelings with some teammates or a coach. Like a lot of areas of life, just sharing your feelings and what you're going through helps calm you, and you'll find that they oftentimes share similar feelings. And this awareness will help calm your preparation because now you'll feel like, hey, I'm not the only one who's nervous. My coach is a little bit nervous. My teammates are a little bit nervous. I'm nervous. And so collectively, knowing you're not alone will help bring you, we believe, some calmness. So share your feelings. Be open. Express that and work on a pregame routine with your teammates and coaches, and you'll be on your way. So great question, Mia. Appreciate you sharing that. And with that, we're coming up on another break. We'll be right back for more insights and great questions on the stadium. Welcome back to Players Next Live. I'm Rob Jeske, and let's get right back to the stadium. This segment of the stadium is brought to you by Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks. Education in every bite. At this midpoint, thanks to our listeners for all the great questions so far, and let's take a few more. Our next question comes from Matt, a dad in Southern Pines, North Carolina. Matt asks, my son loves lacrosse and is playing competitively. I don't know a lot about lacrosse, but I want to help him improve and advance. Any suggestions? Well, Matt, that's a great question. Similar to Will's question regarding football recently, just like school, we first recommend taking an honest assessment, sitting down with your notes and your son's notes, and really make an assessment of where your son is on the learning and developmental curve for lacrosse. You might also engage any coaches that he's currently been playing with, ask them to do a player review, which is very common in today's youth sports world, just like we get report cards from teachers. And after you make that that honest assessment, from there, set a series of stepping stone goals and define the areas to improve. So your son is somewhere in the intermediate phase of youth sports. Set some goals as to what they want to do in high school or maybe an advanced travel team and then on in potentially into college. And then define the areas to improve based on those goals. You know, a lot of times we make the mistake of just practicing for the sake of practicing. But disciplined and structured practice where you're working specifically on the areas to improve that you need to make that next step to that travel team or a starting position or high school, whatever the goal or ambition might be. Having that series of stepping stones not only helps you structure the practice time and any investment you make in coaching or other support, but it also creates an opportunity for milestones of success. And it's something that we talk about frequently within Players Next is helping young athletes build milestones of success. Sports can oftentimes seem like a series of failures in the eyes of young children because they'll see other people advance more quickly. They'll see other teams winning big championships. But if we can build these milestones of success for our children that are based on their goals and their ambitions, regardless of what's going on around them, each child has the opportunity to feel incremental success, which then builds confidence and drives enthusiasm for continuing the process. We'd also recommend once you've built that honest assessment and you've built the success plan with the milestones of success, search for a qualified private coach in your area. You can ask a high school coach. Sometimes they even do some coaching on the side, a local college coach or a mentor. You know, one of the great stories that I experienced was with my own family, and we found a college player that was offering to do private coaching for young players in the off season and during the summers. And for my daughter to have the opportunity to practice and train at a high level with someone of that stature in the soccer world was really a unique opportunity. That individual became a mentor, a role model, and it was also just exciting for my daughter to, you know, we forget sometimes in kids' eyes, those high school and college players, they really look up to those athletes and see them as a place they want to get to. So that connection was really a unique opportunity. So I hope all that information helps, Matt, and best of luck with your son's lacrosse ambitions. Our next question comes from Elizabeth, a mom in Richmond, Virginia. Elizabeth asks, our 14-year-old daughter has golf ambitions. She practices well and shoots good scores on her home course. However, her tournament scores are almost 10 strokes higher than what she shoots on our home course. Any advice or direction? Well, Elizabeth, this pattern is very common, not just in golf, but across other sports, in terms of making that transition from the way we practice to the way we compete. In regards to your daughter's golf ambitions, first, we would recommend that she spend a little less time on the range and more on the course. One of the, with the development of practice facilities in golf, and we see PGA Tour and LPGA Tour players working with their coaches and fine-tuning their swings, we forget that those are the epitome of the game, and those are finely tuned race cars, if you will, that are tweaking and adjusting to find that differentiator in performance. But one of the things that I believe has been lost in youth golf is the ability to play the game, which affects the issue that you raised in your question, which is hitting the ball around the golf course, learning to score from a lot of different positions. And when kids spend too much time on the practice range trying to perfect their swing, make their swing in their mind so it won't break down, they miss the huge opportunity of being out on the course and focusing more on playing golf versus playing golf swing, as we hear many coaches describe. And I think one of the things that young players need to learn and also parents is that there is no perfect or ultimately always reliable golf swing. The golf swing is at best a flawed activity, and the game of golf is really played by taking the best swing that we have on that day, which will probably change over the course of four hours in a tournament round, and learning how to manage our way around the golf course, play to our strengths, avoid our weaknesses, and be able to recover and still score at times when our swing is less than perfect, which the reality is, at my age, you realize is the golf swing is never perfect. So second, we'd suggest that you create some competitive goals, adding some fun pressure and metrics to your home course rounds. As you said, she plays very well on your home course, but struggles in tournament competition to match those results. And so by creating some on-course games, some pressure to produce scores, setting up situations, hey, you're four over through seven, let's see what you can do the rest of the round and what score can you produce, will help mirror what you'll face in competitive rounds. Third, keep detailed statistics of your daughter's tournament rounds. A lot of times we just focus on score, which then takes us to the direction of good round or bad round. And really, that's golf is really, really any sport is a lot of gray versus just black or white. And I think by keeping detailed statistics, it'll allow you to then break down and really understand where do we need to practice. A lot of times the example I give is people are very quick to say, you'll hear players come off the course and say, I couldn't make any putts, or I couldn't get up and down. Well, in fact, maybe the reason you couldn't get up and down is because your short game or your chip shots were leaving you 10 to 15 foot putts instead of 4 to 6 foot putts, which are a much higher percentage of makes. So golf is a strange game, and really all sports have a lot of statistics that can be revealing. So have some fun keeping detailed statistics of tournament play, and then use that to assess and figure out what time needs to be allocated to what parts of her game in the weeks ahead of practice. And then finally, if feasible, play some other non-home courses leading up to tournaments. Get off the home course. A home course is home cooking. It's comfortable. You know everybody. You're relaxed. You know where to hit the ball. You know not where to hit the ball. And get out and play some different courses if it's feasible in your lifestyle leading up to tournaments, so that your daughter gets comfortable playing away from home and on courses that she really has to think and rely on her skills versus just that sort of intuitive comfort we get at our home course. So great question, Elizabeth. I hope the answer was helpful. And we'll be right back. Before we head into our next break, I did want to make some comments about our last question from Elizabeth, which was really valuable in terms of how she's assessing her daughter's challenge on taking what she's doing in practice and delivering it in tournament conditions. It's one of the biggest hurdles for young athletes to navigate is developing skills, being able to do them in a comfortable practice environment, and then taking it into competitive situations where there's pressure, there's opponents. And I think we as parents and coaches need to be mindful and very supportive, particularly in that learning to compete phase, that it's a challenging transition, and we need to be supportive and positive and help them navigate that transition, because while they have developed the skills and are ready to compete, learning to compete against the highest level competition and deliver those skills under competitive pressure is a big leap for kids. And some grab onto that quicker than others. But for those that don't, we need to be very patient and supportive for both the mental and physical aspects that are related to that development. So with that, we will take our final break here and we'll be right back for our last segment. Welcome back to Players Next Live. I'm Rob Jeske, and we're coming down the home stretch of the stadium where you, our listeners, drive the bus. This final segment of the stadium is brought to you by the Green Beagle Lodge here in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where your dog or cat will enjoy all the comfort and care of home in a luxurious, eco-friendly pet resort nestled in the peaceful woods just north of I-40 in Chapel Hill. In addition to overnight boarding, the Green Beagle Lodge offers a variety of pet care services, including daycare, grooming, and training. So with that, let's move into our final questions for today. Our next question comes from Morgan, a 16-year-old athlete in Durham, North Carolina. Morgan asks, I want to play softball in college, but I'm not getting recruited yet. Well, Morgan, thank you for the question. And first, all of our coaches would suggest you hang in there and be patient. There's many cycles to the recruiting phase, and there are many types of recruits throughout that recruiting phase. We like to reference the recruiting opportunities or process that schools go through as there are Tier 1 recruits, Tier 2 recruits, and then eventually preferred walk-ons. The Tier 1 recruit is typically a early commit, very high-profile recruit, someone that the schools have identified early on that they need to fill a need, or this is a player that we definitely want. And remember, many schools may be reaching out and recruiting and trying to sign that Tier 1 type of recruit. So schools are looking and working off of a list of potential recruits, and they don't always get the recruits that they want. So that list changes, list evolves, and sometimes Tier 2 recruits can shift up to being Tier 1 recruits, and sometimes preferred walk-ons end up getting a scholarship down the stretch. So just think of it as there are multiple layers. Try and assess where you might be. Are you a Tier 1 recruit? Are you a Tier 2 recruit? Are you driving for a preferred walk-on? And then also, as you develop your plan, which we'll talk about in a minute, try and assess by different schools where you might fit. So a nationally ranked top 10 school, maybe you see yourself as a Tier 2 or a preferred walk-on. But maybe there's a mid-major or smaller university out there where you would be a fit as a Tier 1. So as you make your list, try and assess where you fit and engage that school in that manner. There's a great local story here at UNC, Brian Miller, a baseball player who went through this process, thought he would not. His dream was to always play for UNC. It didn't look like he was going to get a chance through that Tier 1, Tier 2 preferred walk-on status. And then down the stretch, there were some changes in UNC's recruiting. And suddenly, the UNC baseball organization offered Brian an opportunity to come in and be a preferred walk-on. He took the chance, left behind a scholarship, became a member of UNC as a preferred walk-on at the last minute, worked hard, earned a scholarship, and now he's a candidate for All-American honors, leading the great UNC baseball team this year to a terrific season. We'll probably get drafted in the Major League Baseball draft. So when we say patient, it's because if you believe in yourself, there are a lot of paths and a lot of twists and turns in your journey. And if you're undying in your quest, chances are some doors will open that'll give you a chance to pursue your dreams. So getting to a more tactical aspect, Morgan, kids at your level, we also tell them to make sure you have a plan. Expand your target schools. So as we said, there's different levels of recruits and potential recruits for schools. There's also a lot of different schools. So make sure you've got a few schools that are your dream targets and top 20 type programs potentially, or schools that just fit where you want to go to school. And but have a couple of different groupings that are based on where you see your potential as well as the level of competition. There's also decisions to be made about, do you want to be a Division I college athlete for a top 20 type of program? The time commitment, the pressures on your academic and social life are significant. And a lot of kids have looked back and said, you know, I wish I'd maybe played a step down where I could have enjoyed more of the total college experience, and other kids, you know, obviously have said the Division I experience was perfect for me. So expand your list of target schools. Make sure you have some different rankings of type of programs. And then reverse recruit yourself, a term we use to market and sell yourself. A lot of programs outside of, a lot of sports outside of football and basketball, which are big money sports with big recruiting staffs and scouts all over the country, don't have the resources. So most of the sports at a university today, which softball would probably fall in that category, have limited resources and staffing from a recruiting standpoint. So it's incumbent upon athletes and parents that are interested in that school to engage the school and the coaching staff, send video, market yourself, give them updates on milestones and successes you're having. And above all, through this whole process, the one recommendation our coaching and advisory council always recommend to us is keep getting better. So don't get so bogged down with the recruiting process and selling yourself and worrying about who's interested and who's not. Make sure you're getting better, because if you keep getting better and you get stronger in your sport, chances are you're going to get the opportunity to play at that next level. So great question, Morgan, and best of luck in your journey. Our next question comes from Doug, a dad in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Doug asks, my son is an excellent high school catcher and hopes to play in college. He works out hard and plays a long season between high school and travel ball. His body often shows signs of fatigue and pain, and it concerns us. Any thoughts or recommendations? Well, Doug, this is a really important question. Today's young athletes often are still growing children, but their bodies are often being pushed to the same limits as college and pro athletes, yet they lack having a dedicated staff and group of resources to properly train and help them with the rest and recovery phase of being an athlete. So today, we as parents must play that role to ensure that the wellness of our young athletes supersedes any short-term team goals or personal ambitions. You know, kids, especially passionate young athletes, are going to want to push themselves. And particularly as they have success and they're playing on high-level teams that are playing in exciting events, it's oftentimes hard to get them to slow down and properly care for their bodies. So, one of the things that we encourage parents to do is get out and research as much as you can about managing the training, rest, and recovery phase and nutritional phase of your specific athlete's sport, and then try and be an advocate during that process. And sometimes you're going to have to make decisions that may not please the travel coach or the high school coach or even your child sometimes, but we are the grown-ups in the situation, and it's important for us to really advocate, because their bodies are still growing. They may do things that look and feel like high-level college and professional athletes, and that's fun to watch, but we also, in the back of our minds, need to remember that they're still children, even in the 15, 16, 17-year-old range, and those bodies need to be cared for in a different way than those high-level professional athletes. And unfortunately, this is the age that probably needs the most expertise and support, but has the least. So we also recommend getting professional advice. Seek out college strength coaches or members of a college training staff. Seek out through hospital or medical networks, some nutritionists or sports medicine specialists that can help you develop the right plan. There's a lot of people out there in today's world that are really engaged in sports. And by seeking the professional advice, if we're going to play the role of advocates as parents, seek those professionals in your area and have a conversation or make an appointment to really learn and understand how best to manage your child's body and continued development. So we appreciate that question, Doug. It's a really important one, and it will help ensure that your son's ambitions are not only a higher chance of being successful, but then when they ultimately get there, they have a healthy body and mind that's able to compete at those next levels. So thank you. Folks, that brings us to the end of the stadium. We hope you enjoyed this format, and we look forward to you joining our next featured guest show next week. As we wrap things up for today, Players Next and this show want to hear from you as we shape future shows and formats. And we appreciate all your great listener questions today. Many thanks to our sponsors, Revels Turf and Tractor, their exciting Signature Field program, Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks, healthy, fun snacks for lunch, after school, classroom parties, and even at halftime. VGM Club for their continued support of the club and sports management industry. And our local sponsor, Green Beagle Lodge, Chapel Hill's premier pet resort. Thanks to the WSCHL team, and most of all, thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us today. You can follow our progress on Twitter at Players Next or at WCHL On Demand. We hope you enjoyed today's journey and you choose to join us again next week. For now, I'm Rob Jeske, and on behalf of everyone at Players Next, we hope you always remember, it's your dream.